Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. I'm coming to you again from my sabbatical. This is the third week of our sabbatical, and right now Wendy and I are in the village of Arnall on the northwest coast of the Isle of Lewis in the Outer Hebrides. Don't get much farther out than that. The only way to go from here is up to Iceland and Greenland, and miles of beautiful ocean. So this past week has been very interesting. We were in Poolyu when we tuned in last week, and that was a beautiful place. We attended a ceilidh and saw some dancing and playing of beautiful Scottish music. We walked in the hills, saw deer and some buzzards and other animals. Then we went to Inverew Gardens, which were very, very beautiful. And then we took off for Lewis, and Lewis is magnificent. It's very remote, and like I say, it's the furthest out you can go. So we're immersed ourselves. We're going to be here for almost 2 weeks in Lewis to go deeper, a little bit deeper with our sabbatical ideas and feelings and what we're receiving. This week, we're going to spend time with a special guest. His name is John Angus Morrison, and we're staying in his home, which is an old crofter's home overlooking a loch and the sea here in Arnall in Lewis. There's lots of black houses, as they call them, in the village, which are the traditional houses they lived in. Some have been preserved, and you can walk around them, which is very interesting. But in this particular village, there's quite a few black houses that are just right next to the modern white houses, the more modern way of building. So there's that sense of connection to the past and how people used to live. So fascinating place. And like I say, just looking out from the window, you can see the crofters' fields going down to the sea. So it's a pleasure to welcome John Angus, and of course Wendy is here too. So say hello, Wendy.
Hello.
And hello, John Angus.
Hello, everybody.
There we go, and he's got a beautiful Scottish accent, so I hope you're going to enjoy that. So John Angus, you grew up in Glasgow, right? But you have relatives here, so tell us about that.
I have many relatives here. My mother and father left when they were 16. Back in the day, they had large families, and it would be the eldest that would inherit the croft and the house. And so most people left from Glasgow, especially, to become... The women generally became nurses, teachers, and the men became policemen and engineers. I travelled frequently to Lewis, back to Lewis, to visit my... grandparents, and basically I've been coming up here since I was born. And I lived in Glasgow, then I went travelling, and 17 years ago I bought this house in Arnall.
And he totally remodeled it, right, basically?
Yes. It was 5 years of my life working on it. It's an awful lot of work. But I'm very glad I did it. Something that I don't think is something that you would do twice in your life.
Right. It's a lot of work.
An awful lot of work.
So when we went to church this past Sunday to one of the free churches, that they call them. They're not denominational, a free church. And we were particularly interested in the presenting music, because they have a way of singing the Psalms in a very evocative manner. There was some of that when we went, but what was interesting was after the service, somebody came up to us and introduced themselves and hoped we'd come back for the evening service. And they said the name was Joan, and we mentioned John Angus, and he said, "Oh, that's my nephew." So it's a small world up here. So there's a lot of connections, with Canada and the U.S. too, because a lot of people not only left for Glasgow, I think, but they left for further afield. But people still connect. We were up at a beautiful part of the island on the top of it called the Point of Ness, and there were some kids there, about 10, I think. And one of them was said he was living, he's from Canada, but he was living here for a year. Because his cousin lived here, so still that connection with the larger world, and I guess that's true, isn't it? Of Lewis is you know, the seafaring history of it. I mean, you know, people have been traveling for thousands of years, basically.
Thousands and thousands of years. But as you said, the seafaring, an awful lot of people joined the Merchant Navy.
Uh-huh.
And so the people that live here, you might not think it, but they're very, very well traveled.
Right.
In general.
So it's an interesting combination in that regard, you know, that it seems very ancient and primitive in some ways, and yet also sophisticated and worldly, because like John Angus said, the people have traveled widely, and they're not limited to the island at all. So it gives it a very interesting feel. So you've come back here. How would you describe this place? I mean, if you were to describe the vibe of Lewis, that's for you, what would it be?
To me, it's almost a different country from Scotland, because it's got a Gaelic culture. Gaelic's very much alive and well on Lewis, especially where we are at the moment on the west side of Lewis. I think they're reckon about 65% of the population are fluent and speak it as a daily language.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place, as you have seen, especially in the summer. The wildflowers everywhere. It's a beautiful day today.
It really is.
The people are pretty spiritual. It's very strong Protestant church. That would be the Church of Scotland and the Free Church. And the Associated Free Church, they split a few years ago. And it's quite interesting, because if you go further down the Outer Hebrides, you come across the Isle of Harris, which isn't actually an island. It's just, in Gaelic, it's called Naherig. It just means a bit of land separated by a mountain range from the Isle of Lewis. And if you travel down to North Uist, you keep going and you come to an island called Grimsay. And after Grimsay, the population just becomes Roman Catholic.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you have sort of Catholic icons, Virgin Mary with Child, and that throughout the island, and all the way down to Barra. Barra, if you launched a boat off Barra, it would probably end up drifting towards Ireland, and it feels sort of an Irish Catholic sort of thing.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get down that far south. We want to get to Harris, though. And it's interesting, the landscape here is fairly flat. There's huge blanket bogs, and you'll see peat workings all over it. But as you go further south, you get into some big, big mountains. And as John Angus was saying, they're very wild. I think there's only like one or two roads. And there's a Golden Eagle Observatory in one place. So we're hoping to get down there and see if we can see a golden eagle. That would be wonderful. We've seen a number of birds. We were watching the gannets dive into the sea yesterday, and there's all kinds of wonderful bird life up here. And a lot of, like you said, a lot of flowers blooming at this time of year. So You never know what you're going to see. We saw a mink crossing the road this morning, and there's bunny rabbits in the meadow. So it's a beautiful place. I know there's deer in the mountains as well, and amazing fish. We've been having some fresh fish, mackerel and herring. And, you know, I thought I knew what a herring tasted like, but this fresh stuff is unbelievable. It's and melts in your mouth. It's so beautiful, and it's so cheap. We just went out and bought 8 fish for about $6 or something like that. So it's very cheap indeed. And one thing about the church service too is it was like stepping back into my childhood, because everybody was dressed to the nines and they all had fine hats and bonnets on, the women, and I hadn't seen that in years and years and years. So it was like going back in time, attending that service. And you were thinking about the role of women, right, Wendy, and men on the island. You were mentioning something about that earlier.
Well, I was looking or listening when John Angus was saying about the women being nurses and then people joining the Merchants Marine or Merchants Navy. Mm-hmm. And was wondering about the different roles, if there was like different roles that the different sexes took on in the
yes,
island.
Absolutely. Men would be fishermen back in the day, and or sailors, and to be away. My own grandfather, he was in the Merchant Navy on tall ships, sailing around the world, on my father's side, that is. And the woman would do what women do, which is look after kids, and they would do the peats, they would do the cooking, they would knit, and just generally look after the house.
I noticed in the, like, looking at, going through the crofters and the black houses, and stuff, that, like, the cooking, of course, was a very big part of the house itself. Yes. and the daily duties and things. But I also noticed that they said another big part of their life was that they read the Psalms. Mm-hmm. And sang Psalms in the morning and the evening
My own grandparents, on my mother's side, and the town of Barvis, which is about 3 miles from here, every morning they would read in Gaelic. Mm-hmm. And they would present. My grandfather would lead the hymn, or the psalm, rather, and my mother and my grandfather would join in. It was quite, in fact, you've reminded me of it, because mm-hmm. I've forgotten. It was quite a unique thing. It would make the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I didn't really understand Gaelic. I was brought up speaking English because I was brought up in Glasgow. And back in the day, my mother and father, who are both fluent Gaelic speakers, they in school were discouraged from speaking Gaelic. I think in my father's case, punished if they spoke Gaelic. And as a consequence of this, they were brought up to believe that if you spoke Gaelic, you wouldn't get on in life. And so we've been brought up in Glasgow. We got, there was Gaelic around the house, but it's the sort of thing that your mum would ask you, like, where are you going? Put the light out, or shut the window, shut the door, what time do you call us to come home, sort of thing. Plenty of Gaelic around about the house, but I didn't get Gaelic in school. I asked for it. And the ultimate irony, I instead was taught Latin by a fluent Gaelic speaker from South US, Miss Smith. So I got a bit of Latin, which has come in handy, I have to say. But I studied Gaelic since I moved back here permanently.
So what was it that made the hair stand up on the back of your neck about them singing the Psalms? But
just the intensity.
The intensity.
Committed singing. Very, very powerful. Couldn't even say it was loud. It's just very, very powerful.
Yeah, we felt a little bit of that on Sunday. There was the man at the back seemed to start the psalm, and then everybody would join in. And in the ones I've seen or heard on radio or whatever, or recorded, it's almost like overtone chanting. It's this. There's one person leading one rhythm or line of melody, and then the others would be in harmony with it. But it would give an amazing feel. And I think part of that is because they used to sing and recite psalms in their homes, and then they would gather together in community, you know, every so often at church, and so they'd bring their understanding to the service. So, but individual and then collective. So it's very fascinating in that regard. Let's tell you a little bit about the Black Houses. We've made a couple of references to them. They're amazing looking. They're about 4 feet thick of stone, and I think there's earth in the middle, right? This pack of
some of them, yes.
Yeah, and then there's on top is a thatched roof held down with ropes and stones or planks
and a network.
So that the thatch doesn't blow away. Inside, they're very, very cozy. In the old ones, there was a peat fire right in the middle of the room. In the newer ones, they'd built some chimney work, and so there was a fireplace. And the cow and animal byre would be attached to the house at one end. And then in some cases, there was a barn also that was part of the home itself. But they're very organic. They look like they're part of the earth. And I think only in 1952 did electricity come to the island. So before that, they were using various kinds of oil lamps. And so it must have been very, very different, even in recent history, because I think the last people who left the Black Houses only did so in the early 70s. So it's not that long ago. That tradition was abandoned.
My own mother and father were born in Black Houses. Yeah. And my mother is now 80, and my father's 88 in 2 weeks' time, and in good health, I'm pleased to say.
Yeah, good for him.
The reason they're called Black Houses is because they were literally black inside, because generally there would be a central peat fire, and the oil from the smoke would sort of tar the inside of the roof and give an element of waterproofing, but they didn't have windows, really. So they were literally black inside.
Right.
And then White Houses came along, which is basically a chimney and another level for bedrooms. And this house that I'm in, that we're in at the moment, was originally a black house, and then it was one of the first white houses in the village circa 1900, and it has been altered greatly since then, but it gives me a nice feeling to walk in here and know that people have lived here for hundreds of years.
Absolutely, and if you look out the back window of this particular house, you'll see another black house about 50 feet away, and just decaying slowly into the ground. It's going to take a long time, because these things were built to last. They're quite amazing. What amazes me also is we went to Skara Brae in the Orkney Islands and looked at the Neolithic houses there, and they look almost identical. They got the same kind of thick walls, and they had the same kind of roof. So the tradition here goes back thousands of years. So that the Viking houses we saw also on the island looked very much the same. So there's that continuity for thousands and thousands of years. So there's got to be a influence on people. I'm very much influenced myself by my ancestors and thinking about where we came from and looking at the history of things, feeling the vibe of things. And it's very, very strong here. But it's organic. It's not like it's oppressive. It just seems to be a natural part of the way things are.
Yep, and also worthy of mention, I think, has to be the Callanish standing stones, mm-hmm. which are thought to be about 5,600 years old, and they basically track the movements of the moon. The moon's got an 18.7-year cycle. It floats about the Earth, and at its very lowest point, it actually does a wobble and moves back to its cycle again. And the stones of Callanish track this because the moon skims exactly on the horizon at this latitude. And they're well worth a visit if you're thinking of coming to Scotland, come and visit us in Lewis.
That's right. I can highly recommend and confirm that too. It is a wonderful, wonderful place. And the stones of Caliness are very, very beautiful. They're light. I've been to a lot of standing stones, and a lot of them are dark stones, but these ones are quite a light granite, and they've got striations in them, and so they got an interesting feel. Each one is unique, and you can definitely feel the energy when you're standing there. And it's not like a lot of these standing stone circles, they are surrounded by water. I noticed that in the Orkney Islands, and also here at Caliness, you've got a beautiful viewpoint all around with mountains surrounding, and then the lochs below. So there's that sense that the ancients knew the setting of things. They were very much influenced by the mountains, the sky, the water, all the elements, and they wanted it just perfectly placed, I think, in that environment. And it is a beautiful setting, isn't it?
It's fantastic. It's magical, mystical. There's the moon, as I was talking about, being cracked from the stones. It disappears behind a mountain range called the Cailleach na Móinteach, which is the old woman of the moor, and it looks like a woman recumbent. And the moon disappears and reappears in what would be her throat, almost like an Adam's apple, very big Adam's apple.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it has to be seen to be believed. Mm-hmm. The word unbelievable is used far, far too often, but to actually see the moon wobbling in the sky is something to behold. It's possibly the most amazing thing that I've ever seen in my life.
Mm. Wow. And, we talk on the show sometimes about the veil and how the veil can be thin in certain places, you know, between this world and the other world. And I think when I first went to India, I felt that very strongly and I think it's true today, even as India is industrializing and becoming highly technical and whatnot, the distance between the spiritual world and the seemingly physical world is very narrow, and you can step forth from one side to the other. And I think that's very true here too. It's not heavy with all the weight of our humanness. And, our humanness tends to look always outside of ourselves instead of within. And when we look within, we can see the outside in very different light. And I think some places help you do that. Do you feel that way, Wendy? What's your experience so far on Lewis?
I think, that going to the stone circles, of course, they have such a reputation, and I remember going to in Arizona, going to the Red Rocks, and people oohing and aahing over the vortex centers and stuff, and the stone circles sort of have that same reputation. But if you can get past that reputation and just let it do whatever it is for you, being in a atmosphere and being in a place that's enchanted like that, like John Angus said about the living here in this house, that he can feel the people. You can feel the lives of the people that have lived here before you, and the same with the stone circles. You can feel the energy if you can allow yourself to relax just enough and use it as a portal into a different space, a different mindset.
Well, I think that's true. But you know what I found in we went to Sedona a few years ago, and of course everybody talks about these vortexes, etc. But we found that there was less energy on the actual vortexes that were always talked about. You know, you're supposed to go there than there was in the landscape itself. We went up one canyon and up through different biozones, different trees at different elevations. And the energy there was palpable. I felt it more in those circumstances rather than in the place you're supposed to find something. And I think there's something to that. You know, when you're looking for it, when you're forcing it, it doesn't always happen. You have to relax and enjoy what is. And then you can find the magic everywhere. It doesn't have to be in a special, quote, special place. Just looking at an ordinary flower in your backyard can be a highly spiritual experience if you truly look at it and are present to it. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I love my flowers. This time of year in Lewis is special for me because you have different flowers coming up. It's probably every 2 weeks or so you'll get one species coming up, and orchids and eye bright, lots of things that would have been used in the past for herbalism, medicinal plants,
right.
so on and so forth.
Well, that's one thing that John Angus has done here for us in the house. He's put various vases of flowers around, and when his new guests come, they get a new fresh vase of wild flowers from his garden here. So that's a nice touch, and we appreciate that. And it is very, and you know, we can call them weeds, but again, we there's no such thing as a weed, is there really? We tend to downplay certain things, but weeds are actually flowers that we haven't noticed yet, I think, and that's true of people sometimes. You know, we can look at people and not appreciate them because we can't see the value in them because we have expectations about what that person's supposed to be like. And I think part of this trip, and Wendy and I were talking about that, maybe we'll talk about it more in the second segment, it's being open to every person that you meet. And we've met some amazing people so far this trip and had deep conversations with quite a few of them. And that has been part of the learning. And I've got a quote from the book I'm working on. The book is The Words of My Perfect Teacher by Patril Rinpoche. It's a great 19th century text of that's considered actually by the Dalai Lama to be one of the greatest texts that you can read for all teachings and all practices, whether preliminaries or main. This text is indispensable. So I thought this might be a good one to read on the trip because it's systematically goes through the whole of the spiritual path. Of course, from a Buddhist perspective, but the Tibetan Buddhists are pretty universal in their understanding. So we'll read from that after the break. One thing we talked about the other night with other friends or guests who were staying with John Angus was this idea of eco-psychology, that, you know, if we're surrounded by the built environment all the time, we're not so healthy as we are when we're surrounded by nature, because nature itself is a healer. And it's easy to be healed here on this island because it's surrounded by nature, but not always so easy if we're in an urban environment. But I think we have to seek ways to create garden spots or take time to go to a walk in the park or plant something in even if it's only a window box or whatever, to remind us that we are more than just the things that we fashion ourselves as human beings. And of course, music is part of that too, I think. And art and cultural activities, and we'll talk about that in the second segment too, because John Angus is a musician. He's been all over the world with his music, and he's going to tell us more about that in a minute. But right now I think we're close to the break, and we're going to take a break and listen to these messages from Unity, and then join us in a couple of minutes. We'll be right back.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
Hey, welcome back to today's show. Yes, I'm Paul John Roach, and I'm with John Angus Morrison at his beautiful home on the Isle of Lewis in Scotland. And yeah, if you want to email us, that would be great at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We'll always love to hear your opinions, ideas about this show and whatever came up for you. Also, check out the website. You can go to my website, Paul John Roach, and see some of the pictures we've been posting of this trip. And one in particular really amazed me, and that is the when we were in Poolyu. The sky was looking normal as we walked out from the Cayley, and then 5 minutes later, it was intensely red and orange, and had completely colored the sea loch there, so that the loch was completely cut. It looked like it had gone through a filter, and I said, no, there's no filter here, and I'm not looking through rose-tinted spectacles. This is the way it was. And everybody from the Cayley came out, crossed the street, and took photos, because they were all amazed too. But it's just we've experienced some wonderful scenes, and we try to capture some of them in photographs, so check those out too. I mentioned before the break that John Angus is as a musician, he's been around the world with this talent, and also with other projects, and I wanted to give him a chance to talk about some of those things. So do you want to talk about your music or other things?
My music, I've learned to play the chanter, which is basically the thing that makes the notes on a bagpipe, as a lot of kids do in Scotland. And I learned that, never followed through to the bagpipe. So it was in a pipe band playing drums. And I'm trained as an engineer. I did an apprenticeship, 4-year apprenticeship, and then I worked with IBM for 3 years as a service engineer, fixing a thing called typewriters, which some of you might remember, and bank machines and stuff like that. And I had a very good friend, I still have a very good friend, Jonathan. He played the pipes in the pipe band, and we used to go out on a night in Glasgow and put the world to rights. And one night we had a couple of whiskies and decided that we could pack in our jobs. John worked for an advertising agency, and go travelling with the bagpipes. And I was playing the bowron, or the boron. It comes from the Gaelic boar for deaf. And we packed in our jobs and got a one-way ticket to New York, and then spent a year, this is 1985, a year hitchhiking through 36 states. We're in Canada, three provinces in Canada. And we went all the way, hitched all the way down to Mexico and Guatemala before returning after a year. And after we returned, myself and Jonathan went our own separate ways. No, sorry, we went around Europe for another year. Then we went our own separate ways. And I got used to this fabulous lifestyle of being a street musician. Great fun, no bills coming in the door. Mm-hmm. Free as a bird. We never hitched with a sign. We just took whatever lift would stop and say, where are you going? They say, oh, we're going to Albuquerque, and say, right, we'll go to Albuquerque as well. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly realized that it wasn't the Bowron that was making the money, it was the bagpipes. And so I learned to play piano accordion, a 48 bass piano accordion. And I learned on the go. I learned three tunes and just took off around Europe on my own. And I came back, and lo and behold, I could actually play. I'm fortunate in that I have lots of tunes in my head, just through the Scottish Gaelic culture. Music's a very, very big thing. And I've been transposing bagpipe tunes and traveling. I think I've been to over 30 countries playing, some for longer than others. If any young people out there, if you play an instrument, I can't recommend it highly enough. Just a fabulous way to get by playing music. And I'm not asking for anything. My box is open and people thanking you and seeing children skip down the road when you're playing is very, very fulfilling. And to me, the money that I get is almost karmic money. It's got good karma to it because it's been willingly given for me playing music and singing.
Very good. Another example of someone going far afield here from Scotland. And I'm reminded, you know, when I was a kid, I learned all about Scotland and as part of history lessons and everything. And it's amazing how many people came from Scotland to make a difference in the world. You know, we have wonderful scientists, of course, that made a huge difference. And some of them moved to the States, like Alexander Graham Bell, other states here, and invented and discovered things. I think the British Empire itself was led in great degree by Scottish people. They were everywhere. And part of it, of course, was the clearances and the difficulties that came as a result of the domination by the English and also by the lairds, the landowners. It forced people off the land, forced them across the world. But instead of them being downtrodden, they succeeded. They did remarkable things. And I think this testimony to the spirit of the Scots, and of course, being Celtic, I say it's a testimony to the spirit of the Celts too, because I think Celts in general have done wonderful things in spite of difficulties, because it hasn't always been easy being on the periphery, you know, being shoved up into the north and west of this wonderful British Isles here. But in a way, it's wonderful because some of the best places are up in the north and west of the British Isles. So that's my little soapbox for Celtic. There we go. You've also got other things that you're doing right now, right? I know you're also a film director.
I studied at the Screen Academy Scotland in Edinburgh Napier and managed to get a Bachelor of Art Honours degree. I made some small films and I'm hoping... I'm returning to Madagascar this winter, and I'm hoping that I can get enough film equipment to make a documentary. There are plenty of documentaries about Madagascar, but when I got there, I was just blown away by the place and the people. And I've never seen a documentary really about the people. So there's a little town called Fort Dauphin. It's an old French colony at Madagascar, so they speak French, which I don't particularly well speak French. And I'm intending returning there January, February, March, and hopefully document the people. And teaching some English as well, that's why I was there earlier, at the end of last year and this year. I was teaching English to people within an organisation called SEED Madagascar, which is a voluntary organization, but a fascinating, amazing place. It's like a frontier town. I can't describe it. You have to see it visually, and hopefully I'll get Paul to plug my documentary once it's
yeah, I'm sure it's going to be wonderful. That's good. We're familiar with Madagascar a little bit because of the cartoon films about it and whatnot. And lemurs. Everybody seems to love lemurs right now. Like they used to love koala bears. Now it's lemurs. but which are from Madagascar. But I think we don't really know the real Madagascar. And it's I've seen documentaries myself. It seems like a fascinating place, and I'd love to know more. And I think that's a very worthy project. It's funny, the word primitive has come up a number of times since we've been here. And I know Wendy's come back to something you could call primitive, and she wanted to share that. And that's something to do with laundry. So shifting gears a minute from Madagascar to laundry. You want to talk about that?
Well, doing laundry is not primitive. I guess it's an ageless, yeah. It's an ageless chore that we all do somewhere, someplace, somehow. Some method. So the other day when we first got here to the island, we had a lot of laundry to do, and where we used the washing machine, we then hung it on the line. And so the laundry line is out in the sunshine and overlooking a beautiful expanded field of wildflowers and sheep grazing and the mountains in the background. And Paul and I were giggling and laughing as we were putting it up because it was unfamiliar to us, and the method of doing it was unfamiliar. And so we were figuring out the clips and the how to throw the things over the laundry line. And Paul was holding the laundry for me as I was clipping them up. And for just a split second, it was I was not anybody that I'd ever been before. Doing something brand new to me. I think I have done laundry on a laundry line, but very, very rarely in my life. And I was somebody just completely different from who I usually am. I wasn't Wendy the sailor. I wasn't Wendy the home builder contractor. I wasn't the minister's wife. I wasn't anybody. I was just Wendy, hanging laundry on a line. And it was a freeing experience to feel what it felt like just to be a person without any identity strapped to you, which is something that when you start exploring the identities that are given to you and your role play that is given to you, that when you strip those things away and you think, who are you? Who am I? So that was a portal in time. It was just a split second, and it was a lovely experience for that split second. And I think it was part because of just doing something that was a new task, something completely different from what my normal life is.
Also very simple, you know. It's not like it's you didn't go to SeaWorld or to Disneyland and, you know, fill your day with planned fun. It was just putting laundry on the line. But sometimes that can be more meaningful, more fun, more present than all the things we try and fill ourselves up with. You know, I think it's not about spending money either. You know, sometimes we think the more money we spend, the better the food, etc. And I alluded to the herrings earlier. You know, sometimes the simplest things are the most fulfilling, and that's a case in point with the laundry. I want to get to the spiritual reading today. Like I said earlier, it's from the book, The Words of My Perfect Teacher, and it's a short quote I want to read, and it came to me today, and I felt there's a lot of meaning here. It can be taken literally or metaphysically, spiritually. It could be interpreted as an outside thing, a teacher you're meeting, but it's also that inner teacher or that awareness of the teacher in everyone you meet. And it says, as we wander like a blind man alone on an empty plain, our spiritual friends, the supreme teachers, think of us with their boundless compassion, and according to the needs of each of us, appear in human form. Although in their realization they are Buddhas, in their actions they are attuned to how we are. With their skillful means they accept us as disciples, introduce us to the supreme authentic Dharma, open our eyes to what we should do and what should not do, and unerringly point out the best path to liberation and omniscience. In truth, they are no different from the Buddha himself. But compared to the Buddha, their kindness and caring for us is even greater. Always try, therefore, to follow your teacher in the right way and with the three kinds of faith. And there's a little poem. It says, I have met a sublime teacher, but let myself down by my negative behavior. I have found the best path, but I wander on precipitous byways. Bless me and all those of bad character like me, that our minds may be tamed by the Dharma, by the truth. And what I love about that is that people show up in our lives, and we can either see them as just, oh, well, that's just somebody passing, yeah, like a ship in the night, or we can see them as somebody who's a teacher for us, something that even is not necessarily a positive person in our lives. But if we can see them as our teacher, then they become very, very precious indeed. And they may not be literally filled with compassion, but we are when we approach them with a certain light, with a certain understanding. So everything that happens can be a blessing if we see it in that light. Anybody got any ideas on that? What comes to you?
I could add to that. And first off, my surname is Morrison, and Morrisons were hereditary judges, certainly in the Isle of Lewis. And I have been guilty in the past of being a little bit judgmental with people. But my mother said to me, she gave me a phrase that altered my thinking. And I would be in my 20s when she said this, because I was talking about someone, not in the best light. And she said, John Angus, see the best in people. Mm-hmm. Try and see the best in people. And that was it. And since then, that's what I try my best to do, even though sometimes I'm biting my tongue and wailing inside. But everyone has good in them. And if you can see the best in people, it goes a long way.
Right. I remember another Tibetan teaching that said, you know, if you see your teacher as an ordinary person, you get the benefit of the ordinary person. If you see your teacher as a wise man, you get some wisdom. If you see your teacher as a loving man, you're filled with love yourself. If you see your teacher as the Buddha, then you receive the ultimate blessing. So if you see your teacher as the Christ, then the Christ is there with that in that person. So it's not about what they are in truth in the physical. It's what they are in truth in the spiritual. So the teacher is as good as you, what you bring to it. So if you bring something, openness to the party, to the laundry, then the laundry becomes a magnificent thing. It's not about the laundry, though. It's about what you bring to it. So this transforms the situation. And sometimes we complain about our teachers or about our leaders or the hierarchy of things, but if we could see that they are simply representing something, and what do we see in them? Case in point, you know, I've been ministering and preaching for 30-some years now, and I must have done thousands of sermons. And so I was listening to this young man at the church on Sunday, and he just graduated from seminary. He was, you know, you could say he's a little wet behind the ears, maybe. But he did a wonderful job, and he obviously had a lot of techniques that he'd learned in seminary that he was applying in a very lilting voice, very beautiful. But I couldn't agree with his theology necessarily, but it didn't seem to matter because there was an earnestness and a dedication about him that I liked. And so I could see through some of the, say, less what's the word? I don't want to put him down. More fundamentalist viewpoint, let's put it like that. Into what he was really trying to do. And I could interpret maybe some of the phrases he was using in another way that was okay for me, because I can't buy into this end time stuff, you know, so much as, you know, it's either all here now or it's not. And they're always talking about the second coming of Jesus, but my attitude is, well, he never left. I mean, where did he go? You know, the presence of spirit is always with us. But I can understand his earnestness about wake up. You know, it's the end times. Wake up to the magnificence of every day. Don't be complacent. And when I understood what he was saying in that light, it became a wonderful thing. So you can go into places that seem not that promising and receive a blessing. So, okay. A few more ideas from John Angus before we wrap up the show. If there's something you really want to convey to the audience today, what would that be?
Come and visit Scotland. I don't say that lightly. I've travelled, as I said, in over 30 countries. I've travelled at a base level, hitchhiking, playing music in the streets, and I have never been to a place as spectacular, as mystical, as magical as Scotland. We've got bagpipes, we've got whiskey, we've got kilts. It's an amazing place. If you like stone circles also, we've got loads and loads and loads all over the place. And I've been to many of them. That's a spiritual journey, going to stone circles and wondering why they are where they are and who put them there. And yes, Scotland's great. England's nice as well. Don't get me wrong. As for Wales.
Yeah.
Wales is beautiful.
Yeah, there we go. Well done. Yeah, because John Angus has been joking about you know, the little rivalry there between the Welsh and the Scottish, and we insult the people we like and whatnot. I don't know about all that stuff, but deep down we are connected. One thing we've experienced in unfailingly on this trip is the kindness of people. And on Lewis especially, you can just come up to some stranger, you're at the petrol pump and there's another person, and they smile at you. And all the interactions we've had with various people have been wonderful, very helpful, very friendly. So that spirit is very much alive here, and I think people will be shocked to be rude. You know, it's not in their nature. They want to be helpful and kind. So that's wonderful. I think sometimes in our more sophisticated societies, we've lost that natural grace.
I just happened to notice there's always a twinkle in the eye, I think, that I've seen here in Scotland.
Which is nice too, isn't it? Well, folks, I just experienced my 65th birthday this weekend. It was a wonderful day, and then a lot of people wished me happy birthday, which I very much appreciate, so thanks for that. But it's like a watershed moment in a way, you know, that 65th birthday. You're supposed to be retired. Anyway, you're not supposed to be, sort of traditional retirement age, whatever. But I'm sitting on the back of the end of the field and felt this is the beginning of a wonderful new period in my life. Life goes on. I'm still way too early. I want to be more right. That's what came to me in my communion there with nature and chatting with Wendy about it. To dedicate myself more to writing as well as being a minister and the other things that I do. So it's good to receive something, some guidance about what's to do. And I invite you to do the same, you know, whenever you're thinking, well, what's going on here? Take a moment just to be quiet, listen, commune with those that are close to you, but commune with the spirit that's around and within you at the same time. Let's see. All right, we're at the end of the show. Wendy, did you have anything else you wanted to say today? This concludes week three of our journey of taking this radio show on the road. And
so I think in conclusion for me that, like Paul was saying, that take to with nature, take time for yourself. Like we were talking about the people that lived here in the black houses, they spent time singing the psalms and giving themselves an opportunity to a break from their everyday. I call things like that portals. I think that it is important for us to let our minds rest and let the freedom happen after that of new ideas and new possibilities. I also think it keeps us a little bit, it gives us a check on our judgment of life, our judgment of our situation, and the judgment of people around us. It's like a reset button.
Yes. And just to conclude with the poem again, I have met a sublime teacher. That teacher is myself, my true self. But I let myself down by my negative behavior, my focus on my own humanness, my ego, I found the best path, which is to remember the truth of who I am. But I wander on precipitous byways, worried and fearful about things that I don't need to be fearful and worried about. So bless me, spirit of all truth and wonder and love. Bless me and all those of bad character like me, because we're all in this together. Everybody's got some warts and difficulties we're dealing with. Nobody's perfect on this planet in that sense, but we have within us that spirit and that mind of the Buddha, of the Christ, that may our minds be tamed by the Dharma, by the truth of our inherent goodness. And that's how we'll let go of the show today. Thank you for tuning in. If you liked it, give us a thumbs up, send me an email, and we look forward to being on the show again next week. So tune in a week from now. Take care now. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Notice how the funniest things happen when we stop taking ourselves too seriously and step out boldly? Listen to Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed as these unlikely saints administer a refreshing dose of laughter and love that will inspire you to step out boldly and experience the funniest things. Join the discussion with Daryl and Ed live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time on Funniest Thing, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
A story from one of the World Wars tells of a Christmas Eve when a spontaneous truce broke out on the battle line. French and German soldiers sang Christmas songs together, shared food, gifts, and stories, and played games. For a few hours, there was peace. Peace passed with Christmas. The next day found the soldiers back in their foxholes shooting at each other. We can choose to see either the tragedy in this story, the soldiers did go back to fighting, or the possibility the story suggests that in any moment, in any situation, there can be peace. That Christmas Eve truce began with a single soldier singing. Others joined in. When I sing my song of peace, who knows how many will join me and how long the peace will last. I can make a difference. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.